right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff. Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on tight.
And welcome to Alouette's Flight Deck, the podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football. I'm Tim Capper, along with Cliffy D. We have something different this week for everybody, don't we, Cliff?
We certainly do. I mean, like, since we don't really have Alouettes football to talk about this week, or until June, really, we've decided to give you, the great listeners, a little bit of a treat. We're actually going to be doing a full-length interview with a very famous football name here in Montreal. Yep, and we're very excited about this.
Yep, whether he be on the sidelines for or coaching the quarterbacks for Dorval and Jean, the 23rd Falcons in the West Island, or whether it be if you remember, obviously we'll remember him from the Montreal Alouettes. We are going to be speaking with quarterback Tanner Marsh. First of all, hey Tanner, we want to thank you for joining us. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me.
As everybody knows, Tanner was with the Alouettes. He was signed in June of 2013, and I guess you were released when you went. You signed with the Major League Football. Is that right, Tanner?
Yeah, I was drafted by them, and I signed a contract with them, and that kind of screwed me around in certain other areas. But at the time, I thought it was the best move.
Okay, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, but. You originally were at West Texas A&M, and then you transferred over to Arkansas Tech.
Yes, sir.
Wonder Boy. What a name for a team, by the way.
Right. No, yeah, it's an interesting name.
But
is there any history behind that name? I'm sorry, Tim.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is there any history behind the name Wonder Boys?
What it actually was is when it was like they originally called the Aggies, I believe, way back when, and they had a player that in one game scored a good amount of points, and he was the running back, the punter, the punt returner, and the safety or something. He played everything. And in one game, he apparently had just a lot of points, and his nickname was the Wonder Boys. So his nickname was the Wonder Boy. And apparently they were really good because of him, and next thing you know, their name became the Wonder Boys. And he actually taught at Arkansas Tech for a while.
Oh, wow. Kind of like Kyle Graves, he does a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Tanner, what got you into football? I mean, you have a little bit of a career here with football. I mean, as far as pro football and whatnot, but what got you into it?
Well, I am from Dallas, Texas, where honestly, don't have much of a choice. It's you know, you start football young, and if you're good, you kind of keep playing, and then if you're not, you kind of end up playing another sport, but. I actually played football and baseball and in high school, and eventually my high school was really big and really competitive, so you were literally only allowed to play two sports. And so I played football and baseball, and you know, I ended up enjoying football a lot more. I was a heck of a baseball player, but you know, at the time I was more interested in football, and from there, and honestly the thing that was crazy is actually in high school, my junior year, our school was so big that we actually had like a varsity, which is a top team. Then you have a JV A team, a JV B team. Then we have a freshman A team, a freshman B team, and a freshman C team. We have a lot of kids.
Wow. Well, I know. If they have to go, you know, they say you always have to go big in Texas. That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's huge. And so how our grade goes is we have like 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. And 12th is your senior year. And technically, you're allowed to be on varsity your 9th grade year. If you're good enough, right? And if you're that good in Texas, you're going D1. You're top of, you know, you're one of the best athletes in North America type of thing.
Right.
You know, and as it goes up, you know, when you're a junior, you're usually on JVA team or varsity. You know, but it's really competitive, right? And the senior year, you're obviously on varsity. But my junior year, I was actually on JVB team.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. And it was... And eventually, throughout the season, I got moved up to 18, and then I got moved up to varsity. The next year, I started on varsity, and I only played 1 year on varsity, and it was a great experience. And I absolutely fell in love with the game way before that, but it was a great experience, and I continued to grow from that all throughout my college experience. So, and the similar thing happened in college. I actually played West Texas A&M, got hurt, had to learn how to throw. I tore my throwing shoulder, had to learn how to throw all over again. Then I dislocated my kneecap, transferred to Arkansas Tech, and only played 1 year there.
Okay.
So I do have a very interesting story, and I love the fact that I do, you know, along with a ton of other athletes out there playing. But it makes it more interesting, you know. It makes it fun that I had to do all this work to get to where I am.
For sure.
Now, talk to me a little bit about that, because I know that your career path to the Alouettes, for example, that was not your typical road to the professional leagues.
Oh, yeah. So what happened was I actually went – so out of college, I literally threw for every pro day I possibly could. I called all the coaches I know, all the college coaches, and everywhere in the state of Texas, Arkansas, everywhere. I said, hey, if you need a quarterback throw your pro day, I'll be more than happy to drive down there. I'll come and throw to your guys. I'll do whatever. And so I ended up throwing in about 5 different pro days. Mm-hmm. And just got in front of as many people as I could to see me. Then I went to all types of CFL tryouts. I went to Montreal. I went to Toronto's. I went to Edmonton's, I believe, and BC, all in Dallas, Texas, because they have, you know, those tryouts all throughout there. Mm-hmm. Well, out of college, the draft went by, and I actually went to the Indianapolis Colts rookie minicamp. Was there, did really well, actually, surprised them, and but I didn't get signed or anything. And after that, I honestly was applying for jobs in Texas. I thought my football career was over. At that point, I was like, I'm a D2 guy, you know, went to camp with the Colts. I was like, you know what? Honestly, I did everything I possibly could, and that's what really made it okay, right? Mm-hmm. And then Montreal called me up. They wanted me to fly out to North Carolina for another tryout. Then I did that one. Then I flew up to Montreal, did a tryout. Then I went to rookie mini camp. Then I had another tryout. Then they signed me, and then from there, the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember,
but it was a very rough patch. I mean, there was literally like 2 weeks in there that I couldn't feel my arm, and I was just out there saying, I'll never forget that last tryout before I got signed, because they brought in, you know, 6 other guys, and all these guys are from big D1s. There was a guy from Colorado. That was when Dan Hawkins was there, so I was for sure like, oh, man, this guy's getting signed by him. It was him, and there was guy from Oregon. There's all these big name guys, and I'm over here, and they got fresh arms. I'm over here, can barely feel my arm. I've been throwing, you know, 5 hours a day for 2 weeks straight now, and I'm over here like crap. But I battled through, and I you know, got a contract, and it was a heck of a time. I enjoyed it very much.
So essentially, the lesson is iron sharpens iron. Don't give up. Like, just keep
exactly
keep
no exactly.
Ready.
Well, it's also exactly. Known that the CFL too is you don't. It doesn't matter usually where you come from, no matter what type of school you've come from, Tanner. I mean, we've seen, you know, just by the current starting quarterbacks in the CFL, that you can come from the smallest school to the biggest school, and you can still make it in the league.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, and that's credit to, you know, the GMs and stuff around here. Obviously, there still is some favoritism towards the bigger school guys, but, I mean, you know, they find these small school guys and give them a chance, so... credit to them.
Now, but before we get to your history with the Alouettes, one question I want to ask you when it comes to your history in football. I mean, was it something that you were that you wanted to do as a kid, that you were pushed into as a kid, or did you try to follow, you know, maybe a hero of yours that said, you know what, I want to play football?
Well, you know, honestly, I was always one of the kids when I was younger that was just, it was kind of, I was kind of good at everything. Mm-hmm. And I loved all sports in general. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood that was not the best neighborhood, but we'd always play outside in the streets. We'd play football. We'd play baseball. We'd play soccer. We even played street hockey, which surprises the heck out of me. I don't know why. I don't think any other neighborhood in the state of Texas did that, but we played street hockey all the time. And it was fun. We got to play all these sports, and I was always good at sports. But the thing that was in high school that was just a little different is everyone started to grow up, and I just kind of didn't grow. I was my freshman year, I was about 5'5". My sophomore year, I was about 5'7", 5'8". And then one day, I woke up in between there, and I was 6'3", 6'4". So that's just kind of how it happened. And the funny thing is everyone, you know, my junior, senior year, I was the most uncoordinated person ever. You know, everyone, if you go back to Texas, Dallas, they hear that I'm, like, known as a runner in the CFL, and they're all like, what? Cameron Marsh, known as a runner in high school, with the combines I go to and stuff, I'd run a 5 flat with the wind behind me. I was long, skinny, uncoordinated, tripping over everything. But in college, once I gathered my legs and figured out how my body worked, it actually all came together and actually became a nice little runner.
Now, you happen to, I said you joined the Alouettes in 2013 officially. You come in at a time where I think Cliff and I would call it a very interesting year, considering who the head coach was at the time, which was Dan Hawkins before Jim Popp took over. What was it like being a rookie in the CFL and being under Dan Hawkins as your head coach?
Well, it was a little different. At the time I had Josh Neiswander there, and I knew him really well. I knew him from Dallas. We actually trained together for like 3 years before that I actually signed with the Alouettes. So I kind of had an insight with it, but once I got there, Dan Hawkins was a very interesting coach. He's one of those guys that when you get, you're like, man, this guy would be a fantastic high school, college coach, but a pro coach, I just don't know. Mm-hmm. It was a little different. We'd be sitting in a meeting for an hour long watching, a motivational PowerPoint, at 7 o'clock at night when we just got done practice. It's been a long day and everyone wants to go to sleep, and we're, wasting an hour going through quotes from Albert Einstein or something, on a PowerPoint. And we're all grown men like, okay, look, we don't need motivation, guy. Our motivation is to make the team.
Yeah.
We're good. And so it was a little different. I think he's a great coach. I still even talk to him every once in a while from here to there. And I think he was a great coach. And I can't knock on him because, like I said, he gave me an opportunity to be part of this league along with Jim Popp and Coach Miller and all of them. So, I mean, they were. It was interesting first year. But I learned a lot in it. It was a good time.
Now, I remember you were actually officially named the backup quarterback to Anthony Calvillo once training camp was done, but then they ended up giving the most of the reps to Josh Neiswander, if I recall. Was that correct?
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird situation because out of camp, in preseason, I literally, the whole preseason, I got like 4 series, I think 5 maybe. But I just did really well with the opportunities I was given. Even when I'd get reps like in practice, I just always did, what I need to do to impress these guys. And because that year it was very interesting because Josh Neiswander was there and they brought in Quentin Porter.
Mm-hmm.
And so those two guys were competing and I was just like the 4-string young guy that was there to kind of just watch and learn and just an arm for camp, honestly. Let's just be honest. Let's say how it is. And I just impressed them enough. And they actually told me when I was there, they said, you're the backup, but we don't want to throw you into a situation that you're not ready for.
Right.
So, they let me sit back. I learned from AC, from Josh. It was a very fun year. I enjoyed it very much. I learned a lot. I learned a lot what to do, learned not what to do. And it was a good time.
Well, you talk about, it's funny, you bring up AC. What was it like being under, I guess we could say, and being a quarterback under the future Hall of Famer Anthony Calvillo?
It was a blessing. I mean, he's honestly, because I also played on when he was a coach, obviously. Mm-hmm. And you could just see there's differences. And so when I was playing with him, he gave me like advice from when he played, what he'd do on this play, how'd he read this, how'd he do that when I was playing with him and stuff. And he really helped me out and from like a player to player, and because he also, it was working with that concussion, so he wasn't there as much because of his head. It was a pretty bad concussion, but when he was there, he would help me out as much as possible because you could tell when I was younger, I was just like, I was raw talent, I was good, but man, there was still a lot to work on. I had potential, but there were still things I had to work on. And, he'd help me with playbooks, things like that a lot. So, I mean, I loved having him there as a player. It was just different having him from player to player, to coach to player,
Mm-hmm. Now, you happen to be a rookie with the Alouettes your first year, 2013. You actually happen to get your first start as a rookie. But mm-hmm. one thing I think Cliffy and I wanted to touch on a little bit with you, because both him and I always talk about this. Before that, I think, and this is pure honesty here, Tanner, is that the thing that if Cliff and I were to think of something that we remember the most when it comes to Alouettes history, to us it seems to be what you did that rainy day in August, late August, versus the BC Lions. For those who don't remember, you set up a winning field goal versus BC in relief of Josh Neiswander. But is that something that sticks out in your mind, or is it just another game for you?
Well, you know, no, that moment, I'm not, you know, that's even when you just talk about it, it still gives me chills, because I'll never forget just that night after the game, and just like the freaking roller coaster of emotions. You know, it was an unbelievable game, and you know, I'll always remember that game. But and there's still other games in there that I'll remember, but that game will always be pretty high up there.
Now, the one thing I remember with that game in particular was one of your first passes was an absolute beauty to, of all people, Daron Carter, because he had started the year on the practice roster, and thanks to an injury to Jamel Richardson, Daron ended up getting his break, if you will. And like I said, that just absolutely beautiful, I want to say it was a 40-45 yard pass. It was just absolutely beautiful pass, and just set the tone for the night as far as I was concerned. Like, once you got in there and just got into a rhythm, like, it was just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, no, it was, I for sure remember exactly the pass you're talking about. It was fun, you know, because honestly, the thing that kind of that year, I actually went in against Toronto. I think it was like two games before that, maybe a game before that. And, it was maybe a little before that. And we were getting beat pretty bad, and I messed up a play, and I actually sent a guy in motion. We snapped it and hit the guy in motion, and fumbled, and Toronto recovered it. And then I stayed in, did okay. And it was just, you know, it was a weird first experience as a professional quarterback. But so once I told myself, once I get another chance, that, you know, I just go out there and I freaking sling it, and just be confident in myself and know that I can, I got myself to this opportunity. Just keep slinging it, doing what I do. So that's exactly what I did going to that game, and it helped me a lot. For example, on that first pass and all the other passes, but then also got myself in trouble a few times in that same game. So,
do you remember what the call was, Tanner, for that I think was it a 55 yard pass that set up the game winning field goal versus BC? Do you remember what the call was?
I'm sure. Yeah. The thing was, though, is I know the call. It was called Gopher.
Yeah.
But it was called to the boundary, and actually, like, because we were in hurry up the whole time. That it's funny because it was actually supposed to be Daron Carter where Eric Deloria was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and we were in such a hurry, and they were running around so much that the receivers were exhausted, right? Because we literally ran the same play about four times. Because in that same series, you know, we started on like the 4 yard line or something like that. And my first pass, I threw a diagonal to. This is a funny part of the story. I actually checked down to Jerome Messam, and we got like 11 yards. And over my headset, I'm getting yelled at. I'm getting yelled at from Doug. And he's like, what are you doing? You're not throwing a ball downfield. And so the very next play, we throw a diagonal to Eric Deloria. He makes a great catch. Boom. Then a few plays happen. And this is like, I think, what, third down or four? I don't remember. Not fourth down, but third down. It was do or die. And the receivers were exhausted. They were exhausted. So Eric just stayed there, being the vet he is, was just like, stay over there, Daron. And because Daron was going deeper play, and Deloria ran it, and we threw diagonals literally that whole game. So everyone was jumping diagonal because that's originally who I looked at. And I'll never forget, I looked at the diagonal, and then I look over, and I see Deloria even with the DB. And, you know, in the quarterback's playing, if they're even, they're leaving. So I just literally hitched up and chunked it as far as I could.
And I think that
ended up being very nice.
That thing said that drive started off with less than a minute left, if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah, I think it was literally like a minute and 2 seconds.
Yeah, yeah. In your rookie season, you happen to be lucky enough to have three starts. Your first start was on September 3rd, 2013, at Toronto. You did get your first start, first career win as a starter in the CFL after that game. What was your thought?
Oh, man, I was excited, you know, because, you know, to me, I was just this guy from Texas that got an opportunity and did everything he could with it, you know. And I was excited. It was a fun time, and, you know, I was playing good football. But the thing that I loved so much is that I was playing good, but to me, there was just so much more that I could grow from. You know, to me, I saw this quarterback that had so much potential, but I need to work on so many things. And so That's what made me so excited about it, because I would do so many things that were bad, but I still was playing good. So, it was an exciting time, for sure.
And you had, you're lucky enough to have two other starts, literally back-to-back after that. Unfortunately, you didn't start again until September 3rd, 2015 against BC. We'll get to that one, but for those who don't know, I mean, when you're a starting quarterback, no matter where you are, how does it mess with your psyche? Does it mess with you a little bit knowing that, okay, I've been a starter for three in a row, then all of a sudden you're summarily, benched and you're not starting anymore? How does it make you feel as a starting quarterback?
Well, actually, my rookie year, I didn't get benched. I tore a ligament in my thumb.
Oh, okay.
So I actually, in the BC game, when we played at BC my rookie year, I threw a pass, and my hand actually, my thumb hit a helmet, and then I got tackled one time, and I put my hand down, and my thumb completely bent backwards.
Oh.
So on my throwing hand, yeah. And so I kept playing through it, and then we came back from halftime, and I literally went to throw a pass, and it just, fluttered out my hand straight into the dirt. And I run to the sideline. I'm like, I don't know what happened. And I look down, my hand is swelled up like crazy.
Oh, boy.
It's huge. So I talked to the trainer, and the trainer's like, yeah, we need to get that checked out. So I ended up tearing a ligament in my hand or my thumb. And I think, was I six game? I believe I was six gamed.
Okay.
I could be completely wrong. Okay. I don't remember exactly. But yeah, that's what happened in that.
Yeah.
So I wasn't necessarily benched, but it still was, And obviously there's politics into that and who's there and, all that stuff.
Yeah, I you're right. I had forgotten that had occurred to you. I mean, either way, you're a starting quarterback, but how does it make you feel? I mean, you're going from starter. I mean, yes, sure, you'd gone 1-2 at that point as a starter. I mean, does it mess with you at all?
No. Yeah, of course it does. But at the same time, I was okay. I wasn't okay, but I'm, honestly, if you met me in person, I'm a really easygoing guy,
mm-hmm.
And I don't mind sitting back and learning or in certain situations or helping out, or doing these things, so which, us kind of hurt me a little bit, but it also made me who, the type of quarterback I am.
Right.
So, it did affect me a little bit, but at the same time, I was, it gave me a time to sit back, look at what I did, learn from it, and continue on, But obviously, everything that happened was not under my control,
right,
and had a lot more, factors other than me. You know what I'm saying? So,
just the way you comment, you were gonna have to at least talk about it. that September 3rd game in BC back in 2015. Just I said, just by your reaction, it's not a game that you really want to remember as one from your football career.
It was a bad game. I'm not proud of it one bit because it was by far the worst game I've ever had in my career. But the thing that's frustrating is that you look at it on paper and you see five interceptions. And immediately, you don't look at anything else, which is fine with me because I threw five interceptions. But when you watch a game and you watch actually pay attention to it, it's not as bad as it sounds because, we watched it and obviously it's frustrating to watch. But there's so many missed opportunities. Like one interception, my arm gets tipped. The other one, the D lineman tips one. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those games. I mean, there's, it was just one of those games that so many bad things happened to me. And it was just, I didn't help out as much as I should have towards that. But I mean, it goes back to it. I just left too many plays in the field. And then there's so much more behind the scenes thing that happened that it was just there's the mess.
Talk to me just really quick about it, because at that time it was Turk Schonert who was the offensive coordinator. I was pretty critical of him, and I just felt a lot of his play calling was, to be polite, pedestrian. You may or may not agree with me on that one, but I just felt that I looked at what you bring to the table as a quarterback and what he was bringing as far as plays go, and it didn't mesh whatsoever. Would you say that's a fair assessment, or am I just completely off base here?
Honestly, I thought Turk was a great OC. But he was in a very, very difficult situation. You got to understand, that year, you have Crompton and me really competing for the starting job, okay? Mm-hmm. Then I get injured, in training camp. Dan comes in. So you have Crompton and Dan, two older guys that understand the game, competing for the starting job in the backup spot, right? And so Crompton gets hurt. So you set a game plan. You go through a whole season doing this, the pregame and everything, and you prepare for the first game. Your starter goes down. Okay. You have this veteran backup. Dan goes down. Then you bring in a rookie, Bridge, who you can't call out your playbook. You just can't. You know, it's nothing against Bridge. You're a rookie, and you just got thrown into the fire just like that. You've got to eliminate a lot of play.
Right.
And your game plan isn't favored towards him. Okay. And so Turk is a good OC. He called a good game that game. And then you get Cato. Once again, a guy that got thrown into the fire as a rookie. Your plays are very limited and only do so much. And you just got thrown in a weird situation, you know. And I, to this day, think Turk was a good OC. He just literally got thrown so many different situations that it's hard to adapt as an OC sometimes. Like the Hamilton game I played in when I came in, Cato got hurt. That no, everyone apparently forgets. He called an unbelievable game, you know, to win that game. He called a great game. And then, so honestly, that BC game, I'm not making any excuses for me because, like I said, I threw the 5 interceptions. Mm-hmm. But the game plan for that thing, that was when Cato, we just got back from, you know, we didn't know where he was. And so throughout that time, he was injured. We didn't know if he was playing or not. That's what it was. I'm sorry. And, we didn't know if he was going to play, what the deal was, and it was a weird situation. And even to, like, day 3, I didn't even know I was starting or not. But Cato was not at any practice because he was injured. And so Turk was over here having to make a playbook for Cato or me. You know what I'm saying? But so now he's trying to figure out which one. And, you know, Cato and me are two different players. You know, we were both athletic and we both can run. But the thing is you can do more run plays with me because I can take hits. I'm a bigger guy, right? So there's certain things that he does better than me, and there's certain things I do better than him. And so it was a hard situation for Turk. And then the game came, and I literally was told I was starting the night before the game, and which is just unbelievable to me. But that's crazy. But you know, and I come out there and I don't perform, and you know, that's just what happens as part of the business.
How many days are you usually given notice before you're told that you're starting? Usually,
I mean. You're supposed to know by day 1, right? Because you know, you don't change anything the way you prepare or anything, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you're leading the team. You're, you know, there's a different mentality. When you walk into the huddle for practice and you're the starter, people are like, okay, this guy's who's going to lead us. This is the guy, you know?
Right.
This is who we're working with, you know? But if it's, you know, a guy that's just kind of feeling it at that moment, they're like, okay, it's just a different mentality. You know, I don't necessarily know how to explain it perfectly, but does that make sense?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it's just a hard situation. And I was, when Turk was released, I was very, it was a weird situation. I was very upset with it because, I mean, Turk really believed in me. He thought I was a good quarterback, and I wish I could have performed better for him in that game, but, you know, it wasn't a good game overall at all for either one of us.
Yeah, you actually bring up a very good question there. What is it like being a starting quarterback when any coach gets fired, whether it been Dan Hawkins back in 2013 and then Jim Pop came in. How is it? Does it throw a team in turmoil? You know, and I'm using media terms here because, you know, that's only how we hear it is from the media.
Well, the thing is it kind of just matters with the vibe of the team, you know. If the team wants it, then it's something that's just, you know, it's actually better for the team. But if the team is caught by, you know, surprise, or something that the team doesn't agree with, you know, it can be a bad situation. But most of the time when that happens, the team kind of, you know, is excited about it. And then the thing is, it comes down to, like I said earlier, the game's a business, right? Mm-hmm. And so when things go bad, it's got to be someone's fault. And so sometimes, you know, doing a coaching change or doing certain things almost gives the team like a spark of energy, you know, like, okay, so, you know, the players, we almost think, you know, okay, the front office obviously cares about us winning. They're making changes. So now let's try to, you know, help them out and make changes. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's like I said, it can go good or bad. It just kind of matters on the feel of it, you know. And I've been in both situations.
Yeah.
Situations where people are excited. They're like, yeah. And then there's situations like, we don't understand why that happened. But
would it be fair to say that, like, and he's been – essentially your head coach for, I would say, roughly half of your career in Montreal. When Jim mm-hmm. Popp takes over as head coach, would you say that's kind of the sentiment? Is that you're like, what the heck is this? Or is there excitement as a result?
I can say both ways. I've been in a situation where we were excited about it, but mm-hmm. then I've also been in a situation where we were confused about it a little bit. So, but the thing is it's, you know, to have a good head coach, you got to know how to respect him, right? You got to, the coach has to earn respect as a head coach. And, you know, it's different. Like, everyone on that damn team respects Jim Popp as a GM. You know, that's no question. He's to all of us, we think Jim is one of the best GMs to be in the Canadian Football League. But it's different as a head coach. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a different type of respect. It's a different type of way the players have to view you. It's just a different level of a GM. So, you know, it's different. So, I mean, I like Pop as a GM, and when he stepped in as coach one time, and then the other time we were all kind of like, what? And it was just a different, it was a weird situation, and it just didn't necessarily feel right all the time, you know?
Right. So we're talking, you know, you may feel one way when he came in as the interim for Dan Hawkins, and there was the next time when it was for names totally escaped me. Cliff, help me here.
Tom Higgins.
Tim Higgins.
Yeah, for Tom Higgins. Yeah. What was it like? I guess we could say leaving the Owls. What led up to your decision to sign with Major League Football?
Honestly, so I was released, I believe, in like end of December, beginning of January, something. I was actually on my way driving from Montreal to Texas.
Okay.
And I was released by Pop. And Pop and me, you know, he brought me into this league. So, I mean, I have great respect for him. We had a little conversation, and it wasn't, you know, I was talking to him a month ago when I came to town. And, you know, he was telling me to keep my phone around me, you know, just in case. So, I mean, we still stay in touch and everything. But, you know, I kind of saw that coming, obviously, after, you know, the last performance I had and everything. But, you know, going into off season, I was excited about CFL free agency and, you know, kind of going through that. Cause, you know, to me, from my eyes, I saw that I had one bad game and a lot of good ones mm-hmm. to see from. And the thing was, is to me is obviously people don't see it the same, apparently not because I'm not with a team, but even, you know, some of the bad situations, I was in an awkward situation coaching wise, GM wise, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it was always a different situation. So, but free agency, I thought I was going to get picked up by a CFL team, but then this new league came around and I got drafted, and which caught me by surprise. Cause one day, I don't know if you know, Dave Campo, who used to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was supposed to be my coach. And as a native Dallas Cowboy kid, hearing Dave Campbell call your phone is pretty nice. So, you know, he's talking to me. He's like, look, great guy. I talked to him. I said, this is my situation. I played in CFL for 3 years. I really want to try free agency, you know. And we talked a little bit, and he said, but look, you know, you're in the CFL for 3 years. Come play for me at Major League Football, and we'll see what happens. Figure it out. You mean, with this situation, you might even possibly get in the NFL with the right moves and everything. And all this. So, I mean, I love the guy. It was a great talk. So I decided to sign the contract with Major League Football. And so I signed this contract with him, and I was told that you're allowed to get out of the contract and NFL teams, you know, are interested in you. But little did you know that in this contract you signed, there was all types of asterisks and little side notes and all this other stuff, which is unbelievable. And
yeah.
So, which is, it's very frustrating, but, I signed this contract. I missed CFL free agency and, you know, the main week or whatever it is, I don't remember the exact date, but the main week where everyone's getting signed and quarterbacks are getting signed and all this, you know, I missed that because I was on a contract. And then even worse than that, I actually had, NFL teams ask me to throw for, you know, certain guys at pro days and stuff. And I couldn't even do that because I was under contract with this league. Cool. The point of the league was to help you get into the NFL, and the NFL scouts, I even drove about 4 hours away from Dallas to go throw for these scouts, and I get there, and one of the scouts is like, you're not allowed to, because you're under contract. And I said, no, in the contract it says I'm allowed to throw for NFL teams. He says, technically not. This is a huge deal. We can't let you. Which blew my mind, and it frustrated the heck out of me. And then get this, you want to tell me some questions? So I literally, this happened, and which completely made me so upset. The next day, after the little situation happened, there was about 11 NFL scouts there. After this day, the very next day, the league folded.
My God.
And at this point, it was pushed back. I think this was, it was about, I want to say, in April?
Was it? I think they postponed it, right? Isn't that what they did, Tanner? They postponed the training camp. And then they summarily folded,
So then they postponed it to this coming up year. So we shall see. But, yeah, so I got pretty screwed over on that. But by that time, I still went to some CFL workouts and threw. And it was really like last second things, just trying to throw for people, trying to get on rosters for camps or something. And honestly, I never got anything.
Right. Now, what you're mentioning, by the way, that's inside stuff that we didn't even know about, and it really makes you look at football contracts in a very different light, I guess. What is your current status when it comes to football? I mean, if somebody called you tomorrow, would you go and play, or is it something?
Yeah, for sure. I still work out. I still throw literally four times a freaking week now because I train quarterbacks, but I still work out. I'm still in shape. I've had some offers. I technically can still play in that major league football league, but it kind of screwed me over once. I don't know if I want to do, I have some offers to go play overseas. I actually have some offers to play arena. I actually had offers to play arena last year, but it was, wasn't sure about it. Had some misguidance like that. I wasn't sure about things, but I still might play. I still want to play. I just got to figure out my options because honestly, at the same time, I had 3 years in CFL. I went to camp with the Colts rookie mini camp. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed playing the CFL. Like I got my experience playing, professional football. I loved every second of it. I proved everyone wrong. I did all these things, mm-hmm. So now I'm like, do I want to continue playing? Do I want to start a life? Because honestly, I love football more than anything, but at this level, there's so much business to it. Obviously, y'all can tell now with the contracts and everything.
Yeah.
And there's just so much more stress with it. And, that's another part you love about it. But at the same time, it's like, when you're doing that, you don't get to start a life. You necessarily don't get to start a family. You're moving around 6 months of the year. You're doing these things. So, I'm stuck if I want to actually keep, it's a weird situation right now,
Right. Being that you're currently not in football, I hear that you are, as you said, you are working with quarterbacks, and you're actually working with a local team. You're working with a high school team. It's the Dorval's, Dorval Jean
23
Falcons, right?
Yeah, I helped out. That's all I did. I got there like mid-season and just kind of helped out as much as I could, did whatever I could. And from there, I'm now actually training quarterbacks. I started my own little quarterback academy here, and yep, just working with some local guys, helping with some CJF guys, just trying to work with whoever wants to get better at the quarterback position because, I went to a lot of different games and you see these quarterbacks that have so much potential, so much potential, but their mechanics are off because no one understands mechanics up here mm-hmm. that well, mm-hmm. Because so many people, even if you're a good athlete, people move to your receiver right away because they're like, if you want a chance to play in the CFL, you need to play receiver. There's no opportunity for quarterbacks there. But there's so much potential, and I just really wanted to teach some of these guys right mechanics. I train a lot of CJF guys right now. I just work with them, and it's exciting because you see them get better with just little mechanics. Because, like I said, born and raised in Texas, been training quarterbacks for 7 years in Texas, mm-hmm. Been trained as a quarterback since I was 13 years old type of thing. And, I know the quarterback position pretty dang well.
Yeah.
Basically, it's just I'm excited about it because no one's teaching these kids right. They have quarterback coaches, but there's a difference from people that played the position and played it for a long time, played it at very high levels, played it for, coached by a lot of they don't understand little mechanics. Anybody can Google certain ways to throw, mm-hmm. but they don't understand certain ways, how the ball leaves your fingers, where your foot needs to be in certain situations, it's little things like that. And that's why I'm trying to make as many connections as I can and just train as many quarterbacks as I can because I love it. And the CFL is dying for a good Canadian quarterback. It's literally wanting a good Canadian quarterback so bad that it's accepting average ones.
And that was kind of where I was going to go with is that's the dream right now, apparently, or it's been the dream for ages now, is to have really good Canadian quarterbacks. And do you really think it just comes down to the coaching more than anything else, or is it like the skill level? Like, is there anything that you've noticed in your brief time up here as far as?
But honestly, what it is you got the Southern quarterbacks. When we decide we're going to play quarterback, like, that's your position. You know, you're training like crazy to be the best possible quarterback. And we have so much competition down there, you know, and it's just, it's a different tradition, you know, and it does have to do probably a little bit with the football style, you know, 11 man throwing the ball when you're younger is a little easier than when you're younger here, you know. So high school, you know, I threw the ball 35 times. I don't think you could be successful here throwing the football 35 times at the high school level, you know? So, I mean, I think that has something to do with it. But, yeah, quarterback, there are some good quarterbacks down that are here that just they're just missing a few little mechanic things to take them to the next level. So, I mean, I agree. I think the CFL is literally dying for a Canadian quarterback.
Do you think it would be necessary for something, you know, like Brandon Bridge being the Canadian quarterback that is, for him to actually go into a Division I, Division II, Division III team in order to get, if he can become a starting quarterback, to get the reps? Because, I mean, he ended up being at South Alabama and ended up coming up here. Is that something that they need to do, or do you think there's a very good possibility that a quarterback currently in CIS can, or U Sport, whatever they're calling it now, can make it in the CFL just through being a CIS quarterback?
No, I for sure think there's a chance to make it through being a CIS quarterback. You know, there's still good football up here. You know, there's not as much competition as there is down south, but there's still some good football. Crap, I was watching highlights from the University of Montreal Laval game. That was a great game. Mm-hmm. That's some good competition, right? But it's just, you know, there's just so much more competition down south. So it would be... You know, it'd help the quarterback, but you can still play quarterback up here and be a successful CFL quarterback, undoubtedly, yeah.
Okay.
It's just, my thing is, it's a different thing. I don't want to sound bad or anything, but coaching down south is a little different than coaching up here. Does that make sense? And it's not just the coaches. It's the environment around, like, the schools, around just the way it's treated.
It can also be the money.
Behind football. Yeah, no doubt. That can for sure be it. But it's little things like that that you also take for granted down south that's just different up here, you know?
Right.
It's just, I don't know how to explain it. It's just little things I see throughout, you know, high school ball. You know, I just went and watched the championship of the city teams last night. You know, it's just little things you notice a difference, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there is a chance a CIS quarterback could play in the CFL for sure.
Now, you mentioned Sejip before, and I was about to say, you're probably one of the very few Americans who actually know what Sejip ball is.
right. No, trust me. It took me a while to learn what it was.
Yeah. Just to explain to anybody who was wondering what it is, I don't remember what the acronym stands for. It does mean something. But I've always said it's very similar to junior college football. Is that a fair assessment?
To a point.
To a point.
Junior school down south still counts. Junior college still counts against you.
Mm-hmm.
CJEP doesn't, right? It counts as 2 years plus out. So I don't know exactly. So, you know, like the Navy Academy and the Army Academy and stuff, they have like a prep school that doesn't count towards your football-wise. So that would be the closest thing I'd compare it to. But we don't really have anything like that down south.
No.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, it's very interesting, the education system here in Quebec. That's for sure. But I mean, at least, like,
yeah,
you said,
I've heard a little bit.
It does at least give at least some of these kids a chance to get a little bit more football experience in them, I would say, because at least now they go and they can play for one, maybe 2 years at Sejep and then go on to university and possibly develop even more there. So would you say that's a fair assessment?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think even with y'all's city ball and then how junior ball works, mm-hmm. y'all have all these different opportunities for kids to – you know, grow as a football player that necessarily, you know, went to maybe a smaller high school that, you know, didn't get much playing time or some situation like that. You know, y'all do present a lot of different opportunities for these kids to have a chance. So I think it's good. I like it. I just, it's a little strange to me at times, but I do like it. And you know what? I also like how competitive it is. You know, y'all actually have robberies. You know, it's I think it's good for the kids.
Now, we have to ask. I mean, it's because you are a, you know, you're an American quarterback who currently is not on a CFL roster, and you're helping out locally here in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
So some are wondering, well, why are you here in Montreal now, Tanner?
Oh man, come on now.
Well, we're just curious. I mean, is it
no doubt?
You know,
one of the 3 years I was playing, I found a sweet girl. So a girl has brought me up here in Montreal to battle through the winter.
I was about to say, yeah, no winter in Texas.
This is winter in Texas right now. The weather right now is what we get in Texas.
Yeah.
So I'm very scared for my life.
I'd be scared if I were you.
No. Just get yourself a good coat. You know, I think you'll be okay. Hey, it could be worse. And I'm thinking, you know, in the CFL, you've played in, you know, of all the cities here in the CFL, all cities in the CFL, it can't be any worse than Regina in the winter.
Oh, no, yeah, no doubt. No, I'm going to agree with that. But let me tell you something that I've learned very recently, that it is a lot more cold to be up in the stands watching a cold game than to be playing in it.
Yeah, I'll agree with that one. Yeah.
And I have learned that in a very hard way.
Yeah.
It was very difficult. It took me, I was up there like, hey, why is it so cold? I've played games so much colder. Like, even last night, I'm sitting there, I'm like, I'm playing so much colder than this, and I'm freezing my freaking nose off here.
I have to say, Cliff and I have been up there in the stands for 20 years, Tanner. So, yes, we know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Kudos to y'all for sure.
We don't get those warming fans and hot pockets and all that stuff. We got to prepare that stuff ourselves.
You want to know the secret, though, what we do?
What's that?
When you see people with no sleeves on, we actually put layers and layers of Vaseline all over our body.
Seriously?
Yep. Vaseline is what it keeps heat in.
Huh. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So literally every player gets a little jar of Vaseline. You walk up there and you're basically in your jock strap and you're just got your glove on and you're rubbing down with some Vaseline.
Wow. That's an exclusive, folks.
Yep.
Yeah, we're not.
You got to stay warm.
When you're
from Texas and you're about to play in a game where it's freezing and you know you got to go to play, but you don't know if it's going to be 2 plays, 3 plays, 5 plays. Whatever, you got to stay warm however you can.
Yeah, you know what, Cliff and Tanner, I don't think, you know, with the big thing now, I don't think with what you just mentioned, Tanner, we're not going to do a mannequin challenge with that one in any way, shape, or form.
Ooh, I would strongly advise against that.
Yeah, I would say just get yourself a good Canada Goose jacket, a nice toque, and it's a good pair of gloves. Yeah, I think it'll be okay. I think it'll be okay.
Well, we'll see. Every Canadian I've talked to, I'm like, yeah, this is my first winter. They don't even say anything. They just laugh at me and walk away. Like, what are you talking about? Why are you laughing at me?
If I say it doesn't get cold. It gets, quote unquote, cold in Texas. It can, but it doesn't. Yeah.
And the thing is when it does get cold, the whole city shuts down. If we get like 2 inches of snow, which isn't even snow, it's like sleet.
Yeah.
The whole city of Dallas is just shut down. Roads aren't there. No one's doing anything. You get 2 weeks off.
My word.
Nice.
Yep.
Talk about a little bit about you helping with the Dorval Jean 23rd Falcons. I mean, I know they only went 1-6 this year. I actually had to look that up because I know they did a story on you in the Link newspaper, I think, for Concordia. I know they went 1-6 this year, but how was your experience being helping with the quarterbacks with them?
Well, it was eye-opening. You know, I didn't know really what to expect, but because I was also helping down south at Texas with my alma mater, we literally have one of the top quarterbacks in the nation for next year. We just had a receiver get offers from BYU, all these big schools. You know, we have nothing but studs around it, right? So, and it's a different environment. And then I go to Dorval Jean, and there's a lot of good players. They just, you know, this is where I basically got my motivation to start my own quarterback academy or class. But because, you know, there's so many good athletes here, they're just, you know, not necessarily groomed the right way that we were. You know, they weren't taught certain things, you know, and they weren't taught certain football plays, you know. They weren't taught football smarts. And so it's just, that's what really motivated me. But it was for sure something that caught me by surprise.
Yeah.
It was completely different than what I expected, but it was a great learning experience. I had a great time. The coaching staff there was awesome. The kids were awesome. It was a good time, and we did go 1-6, but you know, it's a little difficult when you're required to have 24 kids, and we barely make that. You know, we literally had 26 kids at a game, you know. So we were good. It's just, you know, we get tired and certain things. It was fun though. Great experience. It's just completely different, you know.
Now, with it,
the one I'm used to,
with the team being on the West Island, luckily it is, I would imagine, the name like that could be an English or French school. What has your experience been when it comes to meeting, even with the Alouettes, meeting the French fans and not knowing the language as well, I'm sure, as you would want to?
Yeah, the funny part is I actually took French in high school.
So did I, though. But I mean,
but I don't remember anything, right?
Yeah.
You know, I took French, so I basically know how to. I remembered how to say like "je suis tanner," you know. So,
right.
You know, so it was fun though. I love, you know, LBJ, the center for the Alouettes. I love messing with him when it came to French. And you know, when I do the QB sneak stuff, it was always in French.
No way.
That's awesome.
So like we do the QB stuff, and you know, we'd come up and we'd have certain keys on either to go left or right. And we either go, gosh, 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 twat, twat, twat.
That's amazing.
So, you know.
The opposition is completely thrown when they hear us. If they can hear that, and if they do hear that, that's got to mess with them big time, Mick.
Yeah, no doubt. It does. And, of course, you know, being a Texan, I'm over here, like, relaying it all. Gosh, 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 twat, twat, twat. You know, sounding so un-French, it's unbelievable. But, yeah. It was always fun.
Awesome.
It was good times.
You've certainly detailed in this interview that you know, you've had good times and bad times with Pop. Just maybe what are your overall thoughts on the decision of not retaining Jim Pop going into the 2017 season?
Yeah, you know, it caught me by surprise just a little bit, but at the same time, it didn't. You know, after having so many seasons that, you know, you have a losing record, that obviously is going to be needed pointed at somebody. But you got to give Jim Pop credit, obviously. He's a heck of a GM, and you know, at the end of the day, let's be honest, at the beginning of every year, you can put Montreal at the very top of people they have. I mean, it's crazy. We just think about it. Our starting receivers this year were what? SJ, De'Ron Carter, Kenny Stafford, Nick Lewis, Sam Gagere. And the fact that I named Sam Gagere the fifth receiver on that list, that's crazy. You know, and that's a heck, and you just, every year, their players on paper are by far the best. And it's so, you know, you question it. Like I said, I think he is one of the best GMs to ever be in the CFL. But a head coach, it's a completely different thing. So, you know, I'm sad they fired him. You know, I don't know the whole situation because I wasn't there this year. But how they kind of let him go, it didn't seem as, you know, respected as I might have thought they would do or expected to see. But like I said, I don't know all the information and all that. So I think it's honestly, it came by surprise, but it's kind of been something that's been on the verge that eventually was going to happen relatively soon. So, I mean, I don't think he'll be out of a job very long, but as a GM at least.
I was going to say, like, do you think that he resurfaces somewhere else in the CFL, or do you think he maybe goes the NCAA route? Or?
Well, I know, you know, I know Pop is very interested in going down south. You know, he's been up north for a while, and I know that he is interested in trying to start something down south. So we'll see. I think he's a great GM. I think he has the credentials to be a GM down south. It just kind of matters, right? It just matters who you know, who needs to have the job opening and timing, you know. So hopefully, I wish him the best of luck. I think he'll have a job before, hopefully before this year's over.
Now, all the time that you were with the Alouettes, is there any particular story or thing that happened that really sticks out with you, whether it be on the road or whether it be at home? Any funny story that you can actually let us know about?
Ooh, yeah, as I say, I don't know if there's if I'm allowed to say too much. Yeah,
without throwing anybody under the bus.
a funny story. I got a few. I mean, Nick Lewis is a funny guy to be around. You know, Dave Stala, every Halloween, he'd dress up as, he'd come in the night or the game or the day before the Halloween, he'd wear a costume or something. When I was there, he came in as a clown.
Oh, and, I remember that.
Came in there, yeah, he came in as a clown and he made balloons and stuff. And he was in there like before even meetings. giving everyone balloons, just being goofy as heck, and he even showed up to meeting like that. It was so funny.
Given anything yeah, it was, that.
Yeah, it was a very interesting situation. That guy's a good guy. And just, Nick, just being Nick, he's always goofy on away trips.
How are you on social media?
Actually trying to be more active because I'm trying to grow the quarterback thing. So mm-hmm. I'm actually, you know, on Instagram, I started my own Instagram page with that, Tanner Marsh QB class. So I've grown that, I've grown my Instagram, and I'm trying to be more active because usually, you know, I'll be the guy that get on there, you know, comment about some things and creep on a few things, and that'll be about it. But now I'm trying to post something at least every day.
Absolutely.
And we have to ask at least about your name on your regular Twitter account, Tanner. Where did it come from?
First game I ever started on varsity was against a team that just won state, and they just had like 15 people off their team commit to D1, but the team was amazing. And I actually had an unbelievable game, and I threw for over 300 yards, you know, 3 touchdowns, just crazy game against one of the best teams in the state. And everyone was like, who is this random goofy tall kid, you know? And my friend's dad answered them and made shirts that literally said Marsh Madness and my number on the back. And so that's where it came from.
Cool.
Nice.
And so it ended up being this whole like high school click thing where all the students bought these Marsh Madness shirts. So the whole high school was wearing these Marsh Madness shirts. It was a cool experience. Really
that's cool.
And so that's I kind of just got that from my high school experience.
And I love it because, and I admit to being a little selfish with this, but when it came to writing my blog and everything like that, when it came to talking about you, it just became perfect to talk about the madness. And it just worked perfectly. Like Montreal is about to experience the madness. And
right.
I just thought it was great.
No, yeah, I enjoy it. It's fun.
So obviously, Tanner, we greatly appreciate the time that you gave us for the interview. We wish you obviously all the best. And if for whatever time I know, I think Cliff has, but forever, if ever I get to meet you, it'll be a pleasure.
Yes, sir. I'd like to meet you too. I mean, I'm going to warn you, I could be a jerk every once in a while. I'm joking. I'm the nicest guy you'll ever meet.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tanner. Thanks for the interview. Once again, Cliff Opsy, we want to give Tanner all the props and all the thanks for joining us in this very unique situation that we were able to have for this episode. And again, thanks for everything to Tanner for joining us.
Yeah, Tanner, just like I said, just an absolute class act on and off the field. Like I said, I think we just about covered everything with that interview, like I said. So by all means, fans, if you're not following him already, like I said, hit him up on social media. Like I said, go check out his Instagram for his quarterback academy, or just follow him on Twitter at MarshMadness16. Mm-hmm. Just an absolutely fantastic individual. There's absolutely no question about that.
That's right. And obviously, if you missed any part of the podcast or anything that we did this past season, you can head over to all of our archives at Podbean, at iTunes, and at Google Play Music. Also, do not forget, if you want to email us, you can do so at alouettespodcast@gmail.com. You can head over to our Twitter account at AlouettesFLDeck or to our Facebook page at Alouettes Flight Deck. And if you want to contact Cliff AD or myself, contact me at Repact, REPPACT, on Twitter, and Cliff at Cliffy D. So for everybody here at Alouettes Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach. Take off to the great white north. Take off. It's a beauty.